Hey, Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com. Man, this is a podcast that my head is still spinning from. I mean, it just makes you think so much. This is our third go-around with Coach Nick Myers from Ohio State, obviously coming off a great season. All this is possible in part to our incredible friends at Crossover. If you're not using this for your film, I would encourage you to take a good, strong look at it. I use it. I love it. I highly endorse it. Special thanks to our friends at Crossover for sponsoring this podcast. You know, Nick Myers coming off his eighth season, but obviously in 2015, just a great, great year. The podcast reviews some of the places we've been before to a degree. Interesting, his philosophy of running his drills, not only to emulate the game scenario, but where he wants his players to be, and you'll hear some of that. Again, special thanks to our friends at Crossover. Special thanks to all the premium guys for their amazing support of the site. There's good stuff in here, and it will make you think. Without further ado, Coach Myers, Ohio State.
Hey, that's Coach Mike here. LaxCoachMike.com. It's another special day. Got really interesting coach, and as I go back and listen to the stuff, one of my favorites, and we try and keep these timeless, but obviously coming off an incredible year. Coach Nick Myers from Ohio State, back for his third time with us. Coach, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
And congratulations on the season. Like I said, I want to keep the podcast timeless, but had to be a really interesting season to be a coach in terms of ebbs and flows, but all that matters is that you peak at the right time, and you guys peaked at the right time.
Yeah, we were really fortunate this year. I credit the certainly the staff and the men. We had great leadership. A group of seniors that really was very resilient. In terms of handling, as you said, the ups and downs. We play a very challenging schedule, and was really proud of the way. We came together down the stretch. Obviously, would have liked to have gotten, that next step to the Final Four. But, it was a great step, certainly. And we're excited to build on it going into 2016.
Hey, Coach, before I leave the subject, man, as I get older and coach 35 years, I don't think when I started coaching, and I've been blessed, we've had a lot of championships and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I don't think I appreciated as a young coach how important it was to get your team to peak at the right time. And if you have a loss that a lot of people are devastating in the middle of the year, the beginning of the year, I think I freaked my assistants out because, my first comment to the team was, there's only one thing that matters, and that's that we learn from this, and what can we take and move forward. But I think something not very many people talk about in coaching is getting your team to peak at the right time.
Yeah, well, it's something we certainly talk a lot about, and I think what I've learned, and I know it's probably overstated, but it's just, focusing less on the actual win-loss outcome and really the process. And, we outlined as Buckeye lacrosse. I think there was days where we came out with a victory and just felt disappointed that we didn't either finish the way we wanted to or whether it was not a 60-minute effort or, maybe there were some gaps at times. Duke is the perfect example. That was one of the biggest wins probably in our program history, at five. But, the last 6 minutes, we did some things that I hadn't seen this team do in 2 or 3 years in terms of discipline. And, that was something that we talked about when we got home and I was as passionate about that as I was as, things we need to correct after a really tough loss. So I think if you're consistent as a coach, and stay true to the blueprint, if you will, that you create in your model of success, and it's not so tied to, hey, we won, so it's all good, or we lost, and it's terrible. You're consistent with the men to say, hey, listen, here's what we did really well, and here are the things we need to do better. I think that's the beginnings of the framework, hopefully, to create consistency and hopefully prevent your men from getting too high or too low. Handling wins is as important as handling losses, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. Two comments, real quick. Number one, I have a tendency to hammer my teams when they win and hug them when they lose. Because I don't think, players don't drop passes on purpose, metaphorically. If the guys didn't play great, to me it always went back to preparation. We should have done more from the alley. We should have done more in this. We knew that was going to happen. We didn't prepare for it. We saw that happen. We weren't prepared for it, but we didn't adjust very well as coaches in game two with matchups or big littles or inverts or something they were throwing at us that we were surprised about. And number two, and I want to get on with the practices, but it was really funny, man. I was listening to our second podcast yesterday, and one of the focuses in 2013 for you was really building your team to perform in the fourth quarter. I don't know if you remember that interview, you know, and you were kind of breaking the practice even at those time, at that time into four quarters, and there was a big emphasis on the, you know, the fourth quarter and being mentally and physically prepared to play your best lacrosse in the fourth quarter. And as I was listening to that podcast, all I could think about was kind of a metaphor for your season this year, you know.
Yeah, well, we do. We certainly are committed to that. We haven't changed a great deal. I mean, we've certainly made some tweaks. I've had, some adjustments that you do every year. But, our practice model is pretty similar to what it was when we had that last interview together. And, the big thing is, like as you said, over the course of the year, you have to be able to step back and see where you are and make the necessary adjustments. And as I said in the very beginning, you know, it's a long season. And, you know, I think I really have to credit the veteran guys that we had this year that just, like I said, stayed the course, really never got too high or too low and had that expectation of, hey, if we can play Buckeye lacrosse, you know, we can beat anybody. And, you know, you hope that your men have that kind of confidence coming down the stretch every year.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Coach, run us through a 30-second skeleton. Are you still kind of focusing on a really detailed, but kind of a macro four-quarter overview or schematic for the practice?
Yeah, I mean, we still break our practice plan into quarters, and even some of our training workouts. You know, I think that's a great place to start, is to break it into four segments. And then even out of your four segments, you break it down. I mean, you could have three 10-minute segments in your fourth quarter. You could have two in your third and
right,
a longer second. But I think there's something to be said for, you know, giving your men, if you are going an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, we don't usually go a lot longer than that. With the stretch, you also included to bring them in, you know, to have that 30 seconds of feedback, you know, after the first quarter. Hey, all right, man, here we're three segments in. Here's positives. Here are things we need to continue to work on. You know, here's the next piece we're getting into. And we don't post our practice plan, so it's helpful, you know, for me to be able to provide them a bit of feedback, maybe our assistants, whatever it may be, and get them mentally ready for the next drill. Very similar to what you have in a game, you know, so they get used to kind of your voice and feedback. In a short dose, 60 seconds or so, and then boom, you're right back into it for, you know, 20 minutes or so. And then that last one, you know, we try to create, you know, toughness-type drills. It may be a full-field drill with a specific, you know, emphasis. But whatever we finish with, you know, has to have something that's going to challenge them mentally, knowing they're already fatigued from the first three quarters. And I think that's important. I mean, ultimately, to be successful in the fourth quarter, you have to execute and play at an elite level, a very high level, when you're tired, you know. And I think, how do you train for that? Well, you know, you have to look at your practice plan and certainly structure a plan that speaks to that.
Hey, Coach, let me ask you a question. I didn't pick up on it as much when we were doing the second podcast. I think, you know, almost all coaches, I don't know of any that don't, but I'm sure there are putting the time of the drills on the clock when you're practicing, right? Are you actually putting the quarter on the clock as well?
We haven't. You know, I think for me, it's they get pretty comfortable knowing, you know, we kind of give them that understanding when they come up. You know, they kind of get used to those breaks. And, again, we don't emphasize first, second, third as much as we do that last final period. You know, it's
okay.
Two drills in, we'll bring them off quickly. Hey, here's what's coming next. Boom. You know, two drills later, they come up as a group. We'll say, all right, here's what we have next. A couple, you know, again, little feedback. Two things they got to do better, two things that I really like. I may single out one guy that made a buck out of cross play and say, hey, that was awesome. Let's get more of that. Again, a lot like what would you do in a game, you know, a second, you know, and then that last period, you come up and you challenge them to say, hey, we got 15 minutes left to practice. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we need. And here's how we have to finish this practice. And maybe it's been three great quarters and you want to sustain it, or maybe there's been some ups and downs in your practice and you say, hey, listen, you know, it's 9-9 right now. You know, we've been up and down. We got to finish. And they just get used to that mentality of you know, training and wanting to be at their very best every day to finish practice.
No, man, I think it's good stuff. So at the beginning of practice, you know, I want to go back and retouch on some things we talked about back in 2010 as well as 2013. You know, you don't know this, but I mean, one of the biggest influences you had on me and my teams, and, you know, I hear it now from a lot of people. You know, guys would traditionally, you know, watch a NCAA team warm up, and they're going, oh, man, that's a great shooting drill. And they would immediately integrate that shooting drill, you know, into their practices. And I think even, you know, on a micro basis, even like the star passing drill, a lot of people attribute to West Jenny or Syracuse. Metaphorically, you know, you were the first coach that I ever talked to that was really structuring the shooting drills, not only the pieces of his offense, but where his players would get the ball where they're strong, you know, or where they have the best chance to be successful. I've gotten a lot of feedback back on that. Can you talk about that a little bit on shooting drills and getting them to meet what you want the offense to do in the game, number one? And number two, this year, did you have offensive players where you modified a shooting drill, or maybe you can give us a specific example of modifying a shooting drill to accomplish that end? You didn't think I was going to be this prepared, did you? I'm ready for you, man.
No, it's great. You know, I think this year a change for us, we welcomed a new staff member, Brad Ross, who's been a great addition to our family. You know, Brad was a three-time All-American at Duke as a midfielder. You know, played professionally for a long time and had his professional career cut short due to concussions. You know, and spent a year at Brown and then I believe 3 years at Bryant as their associate head coach before coming to us this time last year, as a matter of fact. It was almost right at the end of June, early July, where he joined our staff. And, you know, anytime you have new influx of ideas and thoughts, you make some tweaks and changes. And, you know, Brad, if you've seen Coach Ross play, arguably, in my opinion, one of the better form shooters that our game has seen in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. You know, so he's been great, you know, in terms of just bringing in another set of, you know, thoughts and ideas and ways to repetition, specifically, as you said, the shooting. And I thought we got better there. You know, I thought guys improved. It wasn't wholesale changes, but it was, again, just breaking it down and really spending time with the men in the off season, in the individual groups, you know, working on their technique, you know, starting with the framework and the very basics and then and building from there. Guys like David Planning, Jesse King for us that were seniors, improved, you know, their shooting this year. There was no doubt. You know, as far as your question specifically to like the game day piece, you know, we've made tweaks and modifications, you know, each year to our pregame routine, you know, and I think the goal is always to make sure that you get the number of touches you need, you know, without feeling like your kids are fatigued to start the game. You know, I sometimes think less is more. I think you can do too much in the warm up and have your kids, you know, with a full lather and almost, you know, tired, and then you start slow. And then I felt like you can not get them enough touches or the right touches and feel like you're a little sloppy to start the game. So, you know, we spend a lot of time really evaluating that. You know, before we go in, we'll go in and put our jerseys on. We come back out. Typically we just do 4-on-3s, 5-on-4s, a little 6-on-6, and then we line up and play. So prior to that, first going in is where we do, you know, our stretch, our stick work, our touches. And, you know, we won't do stick lines. We'll get right into position specific touches right away. Attack, midi, and then we'll usually do 2 8-minute shooting drills. And when we're doing our shooting drills, as you said, you know, I don't see a lot of benefit in having a guy like Jesse King taking a ton of shots, you know, on the other side of the field if he's going to be on the left side of the field 80% of the time. You know, so guys know where they need to be. We design drills. We design, you know, I think we had 4 this year, you know, that were like 4 minutes apiece, that were, you know, very specific to the offenses that we were running. And if we were making a change to an offense or going to be in a specific offense more one game, we may change the drill that week for the game day routine to speak more to, you know, that specific offense, whether it was more picking in the wing, picking below the cage, you know, whatever it may be. But that was something that Brad and I chatted a lot about, and I thought he did an outstanding job of organizing you know, again, I hope that answers your question. That's something that we think is really important in terms of getting your men ready to play.
Yeah, and I have a follow-up question to it, but Nick, would you mind giving us a real specific example of I mean, nothing proprietary, but where you would modify a drill to an off-ball pick or a skip or, you know, even just a quick look back to the weak side if you overloaded a side. Can you walk us through one of those real quick?
Sure. You know, I think one that we changed about 5-6 games in, we wanted to get more of a multiple pass shot in our pregame.
Yeah.
You know, I think
that's really important. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody wants to stress his ball movement, you know, and I hope if you watch us play this year, you saw a team that was committed to, you know, not just one pass, but bang, bang, bang type ball movement, you know, and beating defenses not just with a dodge, you know, but also with just really crisp ball movement. And I believe that you can do that certainly, you know. But you have to be able to, you know. I think in order to do so, you want to warm up that way, you know. So what we would do is just something on both sides of the cage, where you start with a basic kind of wing dodge. You put the balls in the wing. You know, young man takes 2 or 3 quick steps in the wing dodge, and then what he does is just kind of, you know, he just kind of sticks his foot in the ground, rolls, you know, throws it through X. And, you know, that guy through X has an option to come up, turn the corner. He can look inside, or he can skip it up to a guy we call in the four position, kind of like stepping down from the top of the box. So it's a dodge through X to a secondary pass, either inside or over the top. And they're tight. I mean, these are 7-yard passes, but they're very quick. They're right on the ear. It's bang, bang, bang type finishing. You know, and again, that's getting your guys, they're not sprinting around. It's creating what we call like a quick dodge in the backside. You know, a dodge where we've worked the ball, it hits the backside, he dodges, he throws it to X, boom, it hits his stick, boom, it goes inside, boom, it gets skipped. And, you know, and that quick 3 seconds of offense on the backside of your set, ultimately to me is where you score a lot of your goals.
So coach, do you have, I mean, obviously we got a guy coming in from the wing, we got a guy at X. Then do you have maybe 2 other lines, and he chooses where he throws the ball?
Yeah, so you can have guys, you know, you can mirror it on both sides. You can go one side and the other. You can have both sides going at once. Like your attack never rotates. You know, they go, once you go from X, once you get that feed as an X guy, then you go inside, and you wait a rep, and then once you're done inside, you go back to X. So that one line of X kind of filters through, if you will. And what
right.
We did this year is we just did it on one side for like 3 minutes, then we would flop it and go on the other side and do it for like 3 minutes. And then you have a line at the wing, and you have a line in like the four position, like top of the box, and those are your mids,
right.
And they just flip-flop back and forth. So your attackmen are behind the cage, and you put one guy inside, and then you put the balls in the wing and the guy in the four, and, you know, the guy in the four position is a step down, the guy inside is a crease, and the guy at X is your coming up from goal line, and, you know, you're getting your kids used to on that backside dodge, coming up to goal line with their feet, and, you know, catching it with speed and timing that inside cut and, you know, guys not knowing where the ball is going is a good thing, you know. And then that four position, like I said, is just stepping down in a space, putting his stick in a good spot. If he doesn't get it, then he wanders over to the wing to do his dodge. And, yeah, I mean, it's a quick one. Like I said, it gets his touches. It gets everybody moving. It's not scripted, so you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know the ball could go in. The guy sometimes turns the corner. We do have a goalie in the cage for that drill, so you're getting live finishes.
Love it. Yeah, and just for the listeners, so you may have not only the wing dodge and the X guy, but you may have 2 lines or 3 other lines that are not scripted. The ball could just go to any one of those lines. Do I understand it right?
Yeah, yep. So.
Man, that's awesome stuff. Yeah, that's why you're at Ohio State and I'm coaching club. I was laughing in my head before about the pregame stuff. You know, I think most high school coaches, you know, or you know, even when I was coaching at Auburn, you know, you're always looking for ideas for the pregame. And I'm always brought back to, you know, one of our favorites here, Coach Cannella. You know, Cannella's like a, you know, 30 minutes, that's it, you know, warm-up guy. And, I mean, the goalies come out a little bit early, but, I mean, he doesn't take him back in the locker room. They don't really change jerseys much. I mean, he is a short and sweet, you know, bang, 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 get ready to go. The question I want to ask you comes back to something you said. I got a bunch of notes here, and I haven't even gotten to them yet. The last 3 or 4 years, I've really started to play games change, you know, my pregame. And there's like a big argument, I think, or a philosophical dialogue, isn't there, about having the kids go through the same routine or making the routine different. Especially, you know, for me, trying to change up our, you know, the transition portion, you know, rather than try and never run 4v3 front to back or back to front. You know, we're running it from the wings or a 1v1 ground ball to get into a 4v3 and changing those drills before every game. Can you talk a little bit about the benefits or the philosophy of being willing to change your pregame during the season and how that works versus having a pregame that you've used for the last 500 years, you said, no pun intended?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, you know, we made a change, as I mentioned, you know, just partway through the season, about 4 or 5 games in, we had made a couple tweaks to what we were running offensively. The personnel had changed a bit, and, you know, I just chatted with Brad. I said, listen, what do you think about doing something a little different and, you know, kind of maybe creating a little bit different of a shooting drill model? We need to get a little more ball movement in our offense, specifically in the backside. So we did it, you know, and I think I'm not sure I would love the idea of changing it every week. I do think you have to have a good pulse of your team, and you have to evaluate, hey, are we, you know, how are we playing? What are we getting? You know, if we're playing at a high level and we're coming out and we're clicking, I wouldn't make a lot of changes.
Right.
You know, if you feel like, hey, this might spark us or this could give us maybe a chance to get a little bit faster start, you know, then you do it, you know. And you know, we're talking specifically about the offense. I mean, it could be the same with the D, you know, your face-off guys. One of your draw guys get whistles. You know, we made a change, beat a new goalie this year, and, you know, he was a guy that wanted more live shots in drills. So we had to create and change our warm-up to make sure our goalie was getting some live shots, you know, in a drill type setting, you know, closer to game time. You know, whereas our goalie a year ago didn't like that. He wanted his warm up, and then he liked having that kind of 15-minute break before the game started. And, you know, right. So every year is a little different. What I've found is, you know, I'm a coach that likes to talk to the guys, you know, and ask them, hey, listen, how do you feel? What do you like? What do you need? Especially your goalie face-offs, you got to get feedback from them in terms of whistles and shots. And then you just got to keep a good pulse on your, you know, your offense. You know, are you getting off to the right start offensively? Are you coming out of the gates in that first, second of possession, getting what you want? If you're not, then maybe you make it a minor tweak. Same thing defensively. So, you know, I agree with Coach Cannella. I don't think you need. I watched some of these high school teams in the last couple of weeks warm up, and they're out there for an hour. I do think you can, you know, shrink it down and get what you need if you're efficient in a shorter period of time. You know, it's so important to come out and have that intensity and that, you know, and that just sense of urgency, if you will, right from the first whistle. And, you know, I think for guys, it's hard to do that if you're out there for an hour, you know, kind of going through the motions to a degree. So that would be some of my thoughts.
It's kind of amazing, though, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to, you know, I have kind of a biased perspective of keeping it fast And I agree. Yeah, changing it every week becomes more of a fire drill. You know, I do like to change up the transition drills just so they're not rote. You know, I mean, the first pass isn't going the same place every time. And the defense has to think and all those kinds of things. But man, it's crazy. I mean, if you're, you have used this phrase numerous times in our podcast, the student of the game, and it's in your bio about the things that you think are important and stuff like that. But if you go watch these pregames, there's a huge, spectrum. You know, I mean, I'm thinking of one really well-known coach right now. The kid's actually in the locker room twice, you know, in the pregame. And, I'm sure there's a method to the madness, and everybody's great at what they do. But it's kind of funny, you know, that coaches have such a wide spectrum of opinions on what they're going to do in the pregame.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, man. Are we still into the tennis balls?
Yeah, we use tennis balls.
I think you were just starting to use them more and more back when we talked in 2013.
what are you using the tennis balls for? How many times a week? What kind of drills? I mean, you had talked to us before about trying to keep the goalies in one piece and not getting their shins broken and everything with having the top shooters, you know, not ripping them from oftentimes in transition might even be inside of 6 or 7 yards, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we do a variety of things. I mean, we use them a lot as a teaching tool in the off season, you know, with our offensive players. You know, I hear a lot of people talking about playing more box and more indoor, which I think is great. You know, I think another way to soften your hands and to get, you know, guys comfortable playing closer together and in tighter spaces to use the tennis balls. You know, guys that struggle, you know, are exposed very quickly when you put them into a tight area or closer to the cage and then you have them have to play with tennis balls and triple threat in a 3-on-2 setting or a 3-on-2 side. So it's great. I mean, it's a way to get their attention and say, okay, listen, you got some work to do here. And then you can bring them back to the wall with a live ball and say, and show them some things. But, you know, a lot of times a player has to fail before you can really get their attention to say, hey, this is an area you really need to improve upon. And then you can bring them back and they'll see the results, you know, which is kind of nice. One of my favorite drills that we do is one that, we do throughout the entire season, and it's great for your defense, great for your offense. I may have talked you through it last time, but, you know, we do like, you know, a line at X, a line on each wing, and a line up in the top of the box. But we put them in positions where they're in like that quick dodge, you know, area. So, you know, it's, you know, a backside type dodge. So the guy at X is catching it 3 yards off the crease behind. The guys in the wings are probably just outside the hash marks on a football field. And that guy in the four is like 5 yards inside the top of the box. And what we do is we put a cone in each one of those spots. We put guys in each spot. We put one defender in to defend each spot in kind of a sprinter stance. And the cone he's on is 5 yards inside the offense. So it's like two diamonds, if you can imagine that. And what we do is I stand in one area below goal line with a bunch of tennis balls, and a coach will kind of stand diagonal between that four and the wing opposite me with a bunch of tennis balls, and he'll feed those two lines, and I'll feed my two lines, and we go one at a time, so they're kind of like one-on-ones, but it's not like a catch and start your one-on-one type thing. The guy at X is catching the ball. The guy, defender, has to actually start in front of the cage in that position, and again, these are quick dodge type scenarios that you're creating without having to go through the whole process of the dodge to pass. And what we're working on with our defense is approaches, live approaches, getting out, breaking down on a quick dodge, you know, approaching at X, approaching the wing. Offensively, we're working on, you know, that little half C with our feet, attacking the ball. We call about chase and square. Chase the ball, chase the tennis ball, square your man and attack. And you're giving a dodger anywhere from, you know, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003 at the most to get a shot off. So it's a quick jab step, get topside, quick foot in the ground. We're really challenging the guys in the wings to get to the middle. We're challenging the D to way. And we got goalies in there that are seeing quick live shots with tennis balls, rapid fire. So, I mean, I think it's something for everybody there. You got your D approaches. You got your offensive guys working on that quick 1-2-3 attack type move. And your goalies are seeing live shots from a lot of different angles and not feeling like they're getting buried. It's a great way to work on their position saves off of ball movement.
You got a fancy name for that one, Coach?
T-ball quick dodge.
I got to tell you, the top NCAA coaches really need to work on improving the names of these girls.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I'm sure I could come up with a little bit more of a creative name. But
I've always thought, like, what do you call that, Joe? Oh, we call that 1v1 to 4v3. Okay.
Yeah.
So you actually have four lines of defensemen in this drill, right, Coach? It's not just one line with a guy jutting out from the crease.
Yeah, well, they just got to take turns. So, like, they're in the middle there. There's four lines going out, but then the guys on the inside have to cycle. If you get too many guys inside, it gets clogged up, and then guys are in the way of the shot. So they just got to cycle in. We use nubs, too. So all the defenders have those little short stick nubs. Nobody has a long stick. So we're using the little like create, you know, the nubs, the broke, you know, we take a shaft, we butt end both sides, and so this is all footwork defensively, you know, and it's just a great approach work, and we cycle our own middies through, so they get approach work. It's a great way to get some of your so-called offensive middies approaches and defensive reps.
Yeah, Coach. kind of a difference with the coaches we interview. Your nubs, do you have a head on them or just a shaft?
Just a shaft.
Okay. Yeah, we probably get 30% of the guys that we interview when they're using that technique. They've got a I got my hands out here like an idiot on the phone. 24-inch stick, but it's maybe 12 inches of shaft and, you know, 6 or 8 inches of head. Trying to incorporate the high side stick position elements in there as well. And then we got other guys that are just focusing on good body position and getting as much of that, you know, leverage into the offensive player's back as they possibly can, keeping their feet in the appropriate position and stuff. I was just wondering. Yeah, I think Tony Seaman was the guy that was big on the heads to begin with, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's just it's a footwork piece. It's really stressing, you know, the approaches with your feet and your position. You know, so many, you know, I watch lacrosse, especially for our younger guys that are learning the system. You know, everyone wants to break down and either throw a poke or a slap or a check or lunge. And what this does, I mean, if you do that, you get, you know, you'll get embarrassed in a drill like that. So, you know, you have to really be intentional with your approach, the way you sit down. It teaches patience. You're trying to keep, you know, you got to get your hands on the guy immediately, but you got to try to keep him between your gloves. So that ability to really arrive, break down, sit, and then be patient is what we're working on defensively.
And I'm just curious, Coach. Your lefty post-up shooters, you keep them on the lefty side for that drill, or do you have them run some right hand too?
Guys usually go to where they're most comfortable first, but we'll mix. You know, I'll challenge guys to go to different spots. I mean, a guy like Carter Brown for us doesn't usually go anywhere but behind the cage. You know, that's an 8-minute drill. You know, so you're really trying to repetition the dodges that you get the most. You know, the close D guys that want to get the approaches. You know, kind of that approach where you have to. You know, one of the toughest approaches for a close defenseman is that ball through X where, like, do I go around the cage? Do I get hung up? Do I not? Do I, you know, and
yeah. That's
what we're working on. You know, we're working on getting back there quickly, you know, but then breaking down and not getting beat. And, you know, that wing dodge approach where you got to get out and take away top side but not give up too much. I mean, we filmed that from, like, the end zone angle, which is a great angle for us. And when we watch that, man, there's so many teaching points for everybody, really, you know, on every clip. So that's a great drill. I mean, that drill alone, that's probably one of my favorites that we do, because there's just so much for everybody, and it's something that, you know, literally our face-off guys do, offensive guys do, the D-middies, face-off guys love getting a dodge. They cycle into the dodging spots occasionally. They get a little taste. It's great for your goalies, so.
Hey, Coach, let me back up and ask you a philosophical question. I love, you know, if you've got players that have developed to the point where you know what they are, you know, and where they're most successful in shooting. If you're coaching a JV or a high school team, would you rotate the guys through all those positions or allow them to start to focus on their right or their left or high or low or where they feel comfortable?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you're developing, we're still at that. I don't want to be misunderstood in the sense that we're certainly trying to develop the entire lacrosse player. I think, you know, there comes a time, you know, late in the season, where again, repetitions are important. If you're doing a specific drill where you want guys focused on the types of reps they're getting the most, that's not to be misconstrued as we don't try to develop our guys' weaknesses in areas that they need to improve upon. And, you know, that's where, you know, our skill work portions of the practice, you know, where we're doing things, you know, the extra work that we put in, the you know, the pre-practice drills where we're getting guys in different areas. You know, we may have, you know, a Canadian lefty who doesn't use his right hand at all, do some things, you know, entirely right-handed for the first part or, you know, so I think to answer your question, if I'm a high school coach or middle school coach, you know, you want to design your drill bank where you absolutely are getting guys, you know, all shapes and sizes to do, you know, drills that, you know, give them the opportunity to really work on themselves in a number of different ways.
Yeah, and man, hey, listen, I have so much respect for you. I in no way, shape, or form meant to insinuate that you weren't working on skill development, or because I know you do in a lot of your shooting drills as well. Nick, is that one video on the where you spent a lot of time on the very detailed breaking down the shooting stuff? Is that a Champion Productions video that you did?
Yeah, I did one with them. Jeez, it had to have been back in 2000.
I was going to say, this is probably like 5 or 6 years ago now.
Yeah, but they came out. They were great. You know, we did some stuff. We really tried to break down, you know, a lot of the skill cues, if I can remember, you know, correctly. And,
yeah.
And you know, stuff that we use. We have our camps coming up this summer, and, you know, we'll be teaching, you know, the same skill cues and basics that we teach, you know, the guys that have been in our program 3 or 4 years, you know, and that I really believe in and think that, you know, are must-haves in terms of that foundation for, you know, an offensive guy, a defensive guy. So it's, you know, we're fortunate, as I said, you know, that we got, you know, to have a great coaching staff and the facilities we have here at Ohio State, you know, to be able to get out and really year-round, you know, coach these guys up, you know, and to have a chance to coach guys from certainly the great state of Ohio. Mike, I know you being an Ohio guy, you got to be excited about the state sanctioning lacrosse in the state. I think that's a huge next step for us in Ohio as far as high
school. I'm not so sure, Coach. I you know, because of, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, back when Matty Kerwick was down at JU, you know, he said, oh, and Brody Barrel said the same thing to me. You know, would you come up and do a coaching clinic for the guys at the Hill, you know, and or we talked about it. And Matty, when he was down there saying, you know, I want you to talk to our club coaches and do a clinic, but then I want you to sit down with me and my guys for 45 minutes. And I'm going like, what in the world could I possibly offer you guys? You know, I mean, really, I just don't get it. And he's going, well, you know, if I want to know the difference between a Princeton practice under Bates and under Tierney, you're the only guy that can tell me, you know. And from that aspect, you know, comparing and contrasting coaches' styles and how they do things, you know, having, you know, 115, 120 hours of podcast, yeah, I'm probably in that position. But I always get asked that question when I go to states about state sanctioning, you know. And I know in Georgia, obviously an emerging lacrosse state, even though kudos to our boy, our local hero, Ricky Lewis, and I got to believe somewhere in that leadership dialogue, his name came up. But, yeah, I don't know, man. You know, I mean, if you get varsity letters and you get to play in the high school stadium and you get all that, you know, in the state sanction like here in Georgia, you know, if you've got 2 or 3, 14 or 15-year-olds that and you've got a facility where those kids are out there throwing and catching, you know, in September and October, you can't even go be around them, you know? And one of the things that I learned from great wrestling coach there, Worthington, you know, we used to have all our high school guys, it was mandatory that they go to U13 practices. They had to go to 3 a season. You know, and the first time I sent a high school varsity player to a U13 practice, I'm telling you, Coach, they went kicking and screaming, okay? And then after that, you know, you couldn't keep them away, you know, when they got to work with the 13-year-olds, and 13-year-olds would go to the varsity game and stand behind the bench going, hey, Bradley, it's me, Billy, you know? I mean, it was a great thing, but my point is, you know, I was coaching U11, U13, U14, you know, more of a volunteer basis locally in the fall, even when I was coaching a McIntosh down here, and, you know, it got to, I couldn't have more than 2 of my players on the field at one time helping the U13, U15 if I was on the field at the same time because of the state sanctions and the how they were defined from a football model, you know. I read our boy Bullman, Paul Eldridge's comments and a couple of years ago at IMLCA, the Ohio coaches got together and we were in there and I was talking about this with CG and Teddy and those guys. I'm going, yeah, state sanctioning is great, but what are you really getting if you've already got varsity letters, recognition, people coming to games, you're playing in the stadium? So I'm an idiot to maybe offer a different perspective than yours, but what do you think about that?
Well, you know, again, I don't want to take up too much of our time hammering away at it.
You're right.
I think that I'm really pro multiple sports. I believe in the leadership at the high school level that we have, and I know it's something that Ted Wolfer has been really carrying the flag for a number of years. And I think with the growth of our sport across the state of Ohio, specifically in this case, to bring consistency, you know, to make sure that everybody's playing by the same set of rules, to have a governing body that can really keep everybody honest and make sure the best interest of a young man or woman is certainly at the forefront. And I think that's what you have when you have the sport saying to govern themselves. And I think when you have a degree of growth and so much like we've had, to not really have, you know, like I said, a governing body that has the resources and maybe the blueprint to enforce and to really make sure that we're all guiding, you know, young student athletes in the right way, I think is really important. And I think that's positive. You know, I think in addition to that, you're looking at a state that's going to host, Ohio State will host the quarterfinals next year. You know, we were out in Denver this year for the quarterfinals. That's an awesome next step for us in lacrosse in this area. You know, it was hosted in Indianapolis, I think it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Right.
So it's great to see that. We're certainly really looking forward to putting our best foot forward next spring, and hopefully it's certainly a goal for us to be a part of that, but hosting will be pretty special. You know, you have the machine here in town, and like I said, I've just, in the 10-plus years I've been here now, it's been so rewarding and exciting to see, you know, the game really exploding in so many different areas of the state.
Yeah, I think I want to say there's an NCAA scrimmage in Cleveland this fall. They're bringing, I can't remember the names of the teams, but Coach Neville and those guys up there were talking to me about that. So, you know, I mean, Columbus is obviously a hotbed, but they were actually, I can't even remember who the teams were, Coach, but somebody was going to go to Cleveland and host an NCAA scrimmage game in Cleveland this fall, too, as well.
Great.
Hey, Coach, listen, man, we've been like 99% offense with you. Any overall philosophical thoughts on changing or modifying or tweaking the way we're coaching our poles or our defenders? Anything you've done to change your drills there or maybe something a little bit different? You know, it's funny, I have probably the number one question I get, you know, on the website, and we get maybe 50, 75 emails a month, and we answer them all, is, you know, looking for new ideas or maybe a different twist to throw in with their poles. I mean, there's a lot of emphasis on skeleton and shooting drills and stick work drills and you know, team ground ball drills with different variations. And I think last time we talked, you actually had a station where they were trapping off a ground ball drill. Any general thoughts on an evolution in the way you're coaching your defensive guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question, obviously. I mean, I think this is, you certainly have to be a little bit more creative, you know, with that end of the field, you know, specific to your skill development, you know, and your small group work. You know, Jamison Kessler's been with me now. He's going into his fourth year. He does an outstanding job of creating a drill bank for our defense that has a progression and has variety. You know, has a number of things from closeout drills on shooters and getting out and breaking down to, you know, approach work, track. We call it tracking. A lot like a cornerback in football and working on a back pedal, working on opening up your hips, working on matching feet to you know, schematical pieces, you know, the technique and form of an actual slide, you know, the posture. We talk about posture a ton, you know, being in the correct posture on the ball, but more importantly off the ball, designing drills that have, you know, a progression where you're doing it with three guys, four guys, five guys. You know, then you have your whole drill bank on recoveries, you know, and starting with a five-man recovery and building up to a six-man recovery, and then, you know, recovering in a 1-3-2, recovering in a 2-2-2, recovering in an invert set, recovering when the ball goes up top, recovering when the ball goes through X. So, I mean, I know I'm jumping around here on you, but there's so many different pockets when you start to break it down defensively from the very basics of the individual defenseman all the way through team defense. And what we've done is just, you know, you over the years, you create a drill bank for kind of each area, and then you add to it, you modify, and then, you know, as you get into practice planning, what I've always had success with, you know, for us is, you know, using that drill bank, looking at it, having it right there in front of you when you plan your practice, say, okay, we need a recovery drill today. You look at your recovery options and you kind of pick one from that area that you like. You have your skill work. You have your one-on-one, you know, make this guy, you know, make the individual better. You have your ground ball, you know, drill bank. So that's what I would recommend for each coach is to kind of break it down into four or five different specific areas and then create, you know, anywhere from five to ten to more drills, you know, and then it's consistent over the years. You know, if you have a coaching change or you have some transition, you have your drill bank, you know, that stays the same. And that's how I feel like you can create some consistency in your program. Off topic, the one thing I would say is, you know, just less is more with the stick. You know, I consistently am watching high school defenders that just play with way too much stick. And that's me personally, my opinion. I'm sure there's others that disagree. I would say that footwork and just more patience and a lot less stick, you know, less checks, more just sitting down and playing great one-on-one defense on the ball is something I would like to see more of. And I think guys just having the understanding of how important their role is off the ball. You know, I think, you know, guys have a tendency to want to be on the ball, but understanding they're only on the ball, you know, 5 to 10% of the game. You know, they spend 90% of their time off the ball and, you know, and really, I think highlighting that, you know, and I think so many defensemen hold their, you know, are evaluated or feel like their success is based on what they do when they're guarding someone versus what they do when they're not. And I think as a coach, it's our job to really stress the importance of what are you doing away from the ball? You know, what is your, you know, your ability to get the ball off the ground the first time? Are you a first time ground ball guy every time? What kind of a communicator are you? You know, and really making sure they understand, you know, what are the keys that make a great defenseman? So anyway, that's a lot of just thoughts, but just some things that we're passionate about here.
No, I think it's incredible advice, and it's something that, you know, sometimes we think about how we really need to focus on our weaknesses, you know, and even though I grew up as a Pole, I think creativity and making the drills different every day to keep the kids engaged and let them have fun, you know, with defensive drills is something I'm always challenging myself about, even if I'm not coaching the defense. I mean, to your point, identifying the four or five areas and then putting, you know, five or as many as you can in each one and, you know, coming down saying, am I hitting these three or four things, or these five things, three times a week or four times a week or five times a week? And am I doing it in a way that's fun and engaging for the kids? I'm intrigued by your dialogue about posture, Coach. And when you said posture off ball, what kind of things are you focusing on with kids there? You know, I always thought big eye, little eye was a little creepy to me personally, you know. So can you talk about posture off ball for just a second, and then we'll get to the camps and wrap it up?
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think for us, you know, the guys will joke. We talk about being in kind of that cheetah stance. You know, you want to have a good flat triangle, you know, in terms of being able to see the ball and your man. You know, we use the 1 foot, 2 foot kind of philosophy. You know, if you're one pass away, you got 1 foot in the paint. If you're two passes away, you got 2 feet in the paint. And then from there, it's just being in a flat triangle and making sure that you're in an athletic pot, you know, athletic stance. If I had to put it in a 20 second nutshell for you, I mean, I think if you did those things I just said really well, you know, on film at all times, if I could put on a tape and say, here's the ball, you're two passes away, you have 2 feet in, you got a flat triangle, I mean, you're in athletic stance. That's where it starts, you know. But when the game starts playing fast and you're tired, you'd be surprised how quickly when that ball moves that guys aren't in the right position off the ball. They're not getting in and out. They're not 1 foot, 2 foot. You know, they start to stand up a little bit, and that's when, you know, things start to break down.
Yeah, and I think, you know, another area where, I mean, it just seems like every year I go back and look at my own coaching, I'm going, man, you were such an idiot. Why didn't you focus on this? Why didn't you focus on that? You know, for whatever reason, we still run into teams, you don't see them a lot, but are very, 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 very methodical, you know, and maybe even teams like Maryland to a degree, you know, and getting the kids, a high school kid, to focus on that flat triangle and 1 foot in the paint, 2 feet in the paint. I mean, coaches that are listening, this will help your team so much, You know, even if you define that area with cones when you're running 4v4 or 5v5 or 6v6 or anything, you know, get the players to focus that philosophy and the way Coach put it so eloquently. But man, the challenge is 30 or 40 seconds into a possession, I think, you know, for a high school kid. That's kind of when they lose their focus. You know, they're real good for the first 20 seconds, pretty good for the next 25 seconds. But if you got a methodical team, keeping their head in that, philosophy is tougher on a 40 or 50 second possession. At least it has been for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at the two teams that played in the national championship game. You know, two teams that I have a ton of respect for, and certainly coaches and Coach Tierney and Coach Tillman, and two teams that we played four times. We played Denver twice and Maryland twice, and, you know, we're fortunate to get a win in one case and a loss in another. But, you know, you look at their model and their success. They play great, excellent team defense. You know, and offensively, they wear you down. You know, they don't settle. You know, if you have a breakdown early, they'll pump one on you, but at the end of the day, they're not going to settle for a low angle shot or a poor shot. They're going to make you play anywhere from a minute and a half to 2 minutes of defense, sometimes more. And I think that's not that different from how we operate. You know, I think, you know, it's not necessarily creating a shot. It's running great offense to a defense as a breakdown. And if you play a really good defense, that can sometimes take longer. And I think, you know, it's a battle of will in a lot of cases of, you know, can we have great team defense and not have a breakdown? And on the other side of the coin, it's, you know, can we play simple offense and not settle and wait till we have what I would call a, you know, a fundamental error defensively and capitalize? You know, so that's kind of the dogfight, if you will, that's back and forth that you see. And certainly in that case, two teams that made it to the national championship and ultimately one that won that did it as good as anybody.
Well, and I think, you know, high school coaches are kind of I don't know what the right word is, metaphorically kind of a half turn behind, you know, watching what's going on with the great college coaches and learning and, you know, college coaches are changing and tweaking the way they practice and all that. But I think you know, I know high school coaches or clinics that I do, you know, it's all about pace. It's all about pace. It's all about pace. And, you know, I think one of the most revelationary podcasts we've ever done was you talking about kind of modifying from a goal of can I shoot 45 or 48 shots a game to how I really focus and the metrics you were doing on quality possessions back in 2013. And, you know, we think about that balance offensively, but it's also equally as important defensively. You know, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, how many practices have I run where I've really had our offense just hold the ball for a minute before they go to the cage? You know, and prepare our defense to be mentally sharp 50, 60 seconds, to your point, a minute and a half, you know, into a possession. It's not as easy as it sounds, especially, you know, with younger, emotionally more immature high school and rec kids, you know.
Yeah, agree.
Wow, Coach Myers, it's a great time to end the podcast. Coach, I'm, you know, I tell people all the time, they're telling me, you know, I'm looking for a really different experience, and, you know, I don't even want to touch on the debate of travel ball versus meaningful camps and, you know, that whole bailiwick. Sometimes I think our sport is going down, the sport that I love and you love so much is going down a trepid path, you know, in some of these travel scenarios. But regardless of that, you know, kind of the summer team camp you guys are running up there, I'll have all of this on the website. But, man, they're doing some great, great stuff at Ohio State. And is that the one that's coming up in July, Coach?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. We have several offerings. The team camp, the battle, the Buckeye Battle is one that's going to be hosted July 17th through 19th. You know, you can log on to our summer camps. We try to offer something for everybody. You know, we have a couple one-day team events. We have the battle. We have the day camp that actually just sold out for youngsters that we're going to offer a second week this summer due to the interest in that, and that's grades, you know, kindergarten through sixth grade. We do a middle school team camp, and then we have our Buckeye 200, which is, you know, kind of our prospect summer camp coming up next weekend. That's actually June 22nd and 23rd. So we try to do a number of things. I mean, we're very fortunate. The facilities we have, in my opinion, are second to none. We use the indoor, the football practice facilities, the Ohio Stadium, So a young man that comes out to our camps is going to get access to not only the best facilities, but in my opinion, you know, a great coaching staff. You know, our players are going to be about close to 20 players.
Yeah, but how's the food, Coach? How's the food? That's what I want to know. How's the food?
Hey, that's critical. Great food, catered meals, and most importantly, air-conditioned dorms.
Yeah, I was good on what was really happening during the camp until I got to be 40, and then when I got over 50, I want to know how the food is.
That's it. Food and AC, critical. And buses. No walking the fields. We bus everybody.
You're the best, man.
Awesome,
you're
man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, yeah, stay on the line with me here 1 second. I'm back on page 4. Coach, I have to tell you, I've been doing this 5 years now, man, and talk to a lot of coaches. There's a handful of guys where their perspective is just a little bit different in the way they look at things, and I mean that in a very, very positive way. Every time I go back and listen to your stuff, I'm a bigger fan than I was before, and I was a bigger fan before that. The Championship Productions video that we were joking about before, coaches, I think you should jump on this. Order that video, and your kids that you're having trouble with shooting techniques, give them the video to take home and play themselves, and then come back and talk about it. Because, you know, when Coach Myers says this is what you should do or this is the way we coach it, you know, regardless of how great a coach you are, it's going to have a higher degree of credibility. And then you can coach off those fundamentals, you know, where he really focuses on the torque and the feet position and all that. I didn't really, you know, I was kind of laughing. That video's older than I thought, but it's great. In terms of the shooting drills and the metrics, go back and read these other articles, listen to the other podcasts. I, like I said, man, I talk to a lot of great coaches, and your perspective always makes me think in a little bit different way than what I hear from other coaches. And for that, I can't thank you enough, Coach.
I'm really grateful for the opportunity this morning to be with you, and you know, thanks for having me.
All right, man. Stay on the line with me here, Coach. This is Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com. Hey, remember, you got an awesome responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Never take it for granted. With all that being said, laxcoachmike.com. We'll see you next time. God bless, everybody.